A Christmas Cable by Pendercart, read by Marianus. Stave 1. The Urtica Mordax was dead, to begin with. The fact that it had withered in the first place was not so surprising. Julian kept his rooms in a state that guaranteed the odd fly, or two, or half dozen, which was enough to supply a carnivorous nettle of moderate habits, but the plant did require occasional watering, a task he completed diligently when there wasn't anything more interesting on hand, and left absently to Ned when he had better things to think about. So when Julian returned home one evening in late December, at the conclusion of a long and absorbing case, during which hadn't even had time to stop in for a brandy, and found its shriveled tendrils drooping limply down the side of the sofa, his first thought was that this was only to be expected. His second thought was not really a thought at all, but an odd pang of disquiet. As he'd pointed out to Mrs. Digby, the Urtica Mordax wasn't a pet. It was ridiculous to have grown fond of the thing, and doubly ridiculous to feel guilty at having neglected it. Shaking this off, he stuffed the plant into a bin and shoved it out of sight behind his desk, then went for the square morocco leather case in the sideboard. Mixing the ink and scrawling out the enchantment was familiar enough that he could manage it even distracted and tired out of his mind. Violet for dreamless restorative sleep, slivers of gold for energy and restoration when he woke. By the time the paper had dissolved into his gin, he was half asleep already. He managed one swallow before jaw-cracking yawn interrupted him. Leaving the glass still mostly full on the sideboard, he stumbled into bed and slept past noon the next day. He'd intended to be up and busy first thing. There was the bill to be sent out for the last case, a matter of some urgency as Julian had been ignoring bills of his own for weeks, and appointments to schedule with prospective clients. Instead, he found himself stumbling blurry-eyed into the street with a nick behind his ear where he'd cut himself shaving, with only a few hours of sunlight left in the day, having blown out the vacuum tube in his Napieric coffee device, a positive tragedy, not least because it had ruined the coffee, and having had a truly vicious row with his landlady over the mess and the noise. His feet turned themselves by their own will towards the commons. It was a foul day, with wet snow falling into gray and slushy streets, and the only cheerful things about it were the gaudy Christmas displays stuffed into half the storefront windows. Still, the prospect of seeing Ned raised his spirits, and when a pair of carolers sprang out at him just outside the door of Ned's chambers with an enthusiastic "God rest you, merry gentlemen," Julian managed to swallow down his instinctive curse and offer a brusque nod instead. He closed the door behind him with relief, shaking warmth back into his hands. Peeling off his damp gloves, he looked up to see Miss Frost in conversation with another young woman. "Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Lyons," said Miss Frost. "Do you know when Mr. Matthew will be in?"
"He isn't."
"Not yet. I thought perhaps you might have..." "No," Julian interrupted, frowning. "We didn't..." He cut himself off, then changed direction. "That is, how should I know?"
"I thought perhaps," Miss Frost repeated, a gleam of amusement in her eye,
"you might have been kept out late together finishing the Marley case, and he might have mentioned to you that he planned to not come in this afternoon."
"I see I was mistaken."
"Yes," Julian said, staring hard at her. She looked back up at him from her desk with a blandly professional smile.
"About the second part, at least. We did finish up the Marley case. I expect he'll give you a full account when he gets in, but I've no idea when that will be."
He looked from her to her guest. "Are you one of Matthew's clients?" She'd risen and was holding out her hand. She had a stylish air about her that owed more to good taste, he thought, than to means. Her dress was of a fashionable cut, but the fabric was more practical than decorative, and Julian's expert eye caught the carefully concealed stitches that had closed a tear in the crook of one elbow. Probably born to a good family, was his assessment, but come down in the world since then. She was peering at him as though trying to place him. Now he thought about it, taking her hand, her rather pretty face did seem familiar.
"Mr. Lyons," she said.
"Ned's friend from Oxford?"
Julian did his best to conceal a start.
"Sophie?" Her blue eyes widened in patent astonishment. He coughed, uncertain how to recover. They had not been on intimate terms, and Julian had not remembered her so much as he remembered Ned talking about her, which meant that he couldn't for the life of him bring her surname to mind.
That is, Miss...
Featherstone," she said, a trifle stiffly.
That is, I was Miss Featherstone then. It's Mrs. Carraway now. That made it no less awkward, but the news that she had married released the small, shameful prick of apprehension Julian would have preferred to pretend he hadn't felt. "I beg your pardon," he said, then looked up with relief as the door opened once more. "Matthew." Thank God, he did not say out loud. Ned appeared cold, wet, and rather sheepish. It was an appealing look on him. "Lines, Miss Frost. Good Lord, Sophie?" "Ned," said Mrs. Carraway, dropping Julian's hand with alacrity, "it is good to see you."
"And to see you," Ned replied, with a smile that was as sincere as it was surprised.
"Lines, you know, of course, and you've met Miss Frost. Sophie and I were very good friends when I was at university."
"Fellow birdwatching enthusiasts," Julian put in, prompting a twitch at the corners of Ned's mouth that might have been a smile or a warning frown. The twitch at the corner of Miss Frost's mouth was certainly a smile. Ned turned back to the visitor.
"I hear I am to congratulate you, but that was, what, 2-3 years ago? It's been an age."
"You've no idea," Mrs. Carraway said. Julian didn't think that dry note to her voice had been in evidence at Oxford, and a moment later he thought he might have misheard it. Her expression was pleasant enough.
"And you've done well for yourself, I see. A metaphysician, exactly as you always wanted."
Ned shrugged off the compliment along with his coat.
"It's a small practice, just barely off the ground."
"Don't be too modest," Julian said. "He's consulting for Scotland Yard now."
"Oh, goodness," Mrs. Carraway said, looking between him and Ned.
Julian thought of skirts conveniently caught indoors and on gateposts, and suppressed the urge to roll his eyes.
"On criminal matters?"
"Occasionally."
"Oh," she said again, and Julian revised his assessment for a second time. This sounded like genuine hesitation, not coyness.
"Well, I haven't come about anything of that nature. At least I don't think I have."
"You're here about a job, then," Ned said.
"I am. I have stumbled across a rather odd situation, and I suspect it may be metaphysical in nature. I hope you'll be able to tell me."
"I can certainly try.
If I may ask."
Mrs. Carraway's cheeks darkened in much the same sort of blush she'd offered Ned back at Oxford, though for entirely different reasons.
"I should like to know your rates up front. Due to the circumstances I'm about to relate, I've recently found myself between positions."
"An odd thing for a married woman to say."
Julian took another look at the mended tear in her coat, then noted, where he probably should have before, the circles under her eyes. Before Ned could respond, Miss Frost had risen and reached for her own coat.
"I think, for an old friend of Mr. Matthews, we might demand you join us for a meal." She smiled at Mrs. Carraway, quick and reassuring.
"These gentlemen have owed me lunch at Christie's for several months now, and somehow they've never found time to make good on their promise."
"An excellent idea," Ned said at once. "If you don't mind Lines's company, Sophie, I think you'll find his presence valuable. He's something of a specialist in odd situations."
"Of course," Mrs. Carraway said, and though she sounded unconvinced, she allowed Miss Frost to take her by the arm and lead her outside, leaving Ned and Julian to follow in their wake. It was really much too late for lunch, and still early for dinner, though in any case the meal was excellent. Julian's interest was mostly in the coffee, but the hot food seemed to do Mrs. Carraway some good. She rallied as the soup course was removed, taking a moment to compose her thoughts.
"I'm here not only on my own behalf, but on my colleagues as well," she said. "My former colleagues, that is."
"Where were you employed?" Ned asked.
"At the Waterley Telegraph Company. Several of the colleagues I spoke of are still employed there. Others have been relieved of their positions. That happened to me 2 days ago. The reason given was inadequate performance."
"The reason given?" Miss Frost asked. "You disagree, then?"
"No," said Mrs. Carraway. She spoke very precisely. Julian thought it was out of embarrassment. "I was with Waterley for a little over 3 months. I believe I gave no cause for complaint at the beginning, but I was performing very poorly by the end. My speed and accuracy both suffered. I would have fired myself."
Her knife and fork had gone still on her plate.
"Had you been ill?"
That was Ned, and very quietly.
"Not ill, exactly. Run down. I was not the only one. The work had become oddly exhausting.
the floor supervisor said. Her fingers tightened on the knife. He said that was what came of hiring women. Miss Frost's face was carefully expressionless. Were there many women who were run down by the work?
Yes, but then a great many of the operators are women to begin with. I was in another telegraph office for over a year before I came to Waterloo, Miss Frost. The work takes skill and concentration. It does not bleed a person of energy until she's ready to faint at her desk, as some of us did.
I suppose this has already occurred to you, Ned said, watching her face. But what you describe sounds like a matter for a physician, not a metaphysician.
We have seen physicians. They've suggested nothing but overwork, which is not...
She stopped herself with an effort.
But yes, that has occurred to me. It does not explain the smell.
The smell? Julian broke in for the first time, leaning across the table.
Yes, like sulfur, but not.
She turned to Ned. I remember once or twice watching you work an enchantment very quickly, and there was a smell just like that. And 2 years ago, our cook tried a cantrip to warm a soup that had gone cold. It worked, but badly, and the kitchens reeked all that evening.
You think someone is working enchantments in the telegraph office, Julian suggested, and that has been making you ill.
I don't know, Mr. Lyons. I don't know the first thing about magic. That's why I'm here. But I do know that smell, and I know a touch of it would hang about the air when we arrived every morning, and when I came home every evening, I could still smell it on my clothes.
Julian thought constant exposure to a stench like that could be enough to make anyone sick, but he held his tongue.
Ned was nodding thoughtfully. It sounds as though it bears investigation, at least. I can certainly look into it. Mrs. Carraway gave a quick nod.
I hoped you would, but as I said, your rates...
Oh, don't worry about that, Ned said easily. Julian resisted the urge to kick him under the table. Consulting with the yard or not, his practice couldn't survive on charity cases. I'll drop by tomorrow, see if anything strikes me.
I can pay you, Mrs. Carraway said. And Julian warmed a little to the insistence in her pretty blue eyes.
And I will, only it may be some time.
Mr. Matthew's rates are quite reasonable, Miss Frost assured her, and he is accustomed to receiving his fees in installments. But he will need to better determine the nature of the work before he knows what to charge. Is there any more information you can give us?
Well, she reached into her handbag and pulled out a small slip of stiff blue paper.
There's this. I don't know if it signifies anything.
She set it in the center of the table, in front of Miss Frost. Ned's shoulder brushed against his as they all leaned in to read. It was a telegraph form, much like the hundreds or thousands Julian had seen in his life. He noted the Waterloo name blazoned across the top, then the date, December 21st, 2 days before, and then read the body of the message in complete confusion. It was a series of meaningless letters and numbers, jumbled up in no order he could understand.
Is that some sort of operator's shorthand?
Mrs. Carraway shook her head.
I've no idea what it means. We get odd messages all the time, of course. Usually it's just financial information, instructions for trading on the exchange, that sort of thing. There was one gentleman who would send out queer cables several times a day. She smiled, and the last several years fell away until she looked as fresh-faced as she ever had when Ned handed her into a punt at Oxford. Eventually I learned what it was about. He was a chess enthusiast, carrying out a dozen games at once with friends across the country. And each of the cables was instructions for the next move. So, as I say, we're used to odd messages. But I had never seen so many of them before I came to Waterloo, and I couldn't for the life of me tell you what they are, Mr. Lyons. She indicated the form on the table. By the time I left Waterloo, I saw more messages like this than messages I could understand. This was the first thing about the whole business that had really intrigued Julian. He reached for the form and read it through again.
"Odd indeed," he said, half under his breath. "May I keep this?"
"Of course."
Julian folded the form and slipped it into his pocket. When he looked up again, he found Ned watching him warmly. He raised his eyebrows in question.
"You've caught Mr. Lyne's attention," Ned told Mrs. Carraway. "We'll be glad to take the case."
The rest of the meal passed in idle chatter. Mrs. Carraway seemed able to let go of her preoccupation now that she had said what she came to say. She brightened visibly when Ned asked after her brothers, still living in Oxfordshire with their families. Julian noticed, however, how deftly she sidestepped any conversational avenue that might have touched on her husband. This seemed an established habit, and it made him curious. Though professional investigator or no, he had more tact than to ask about it outright. Besides, it would only have irritated Ned. In the meantime, Mrs. Carraway was finding acquaintances in common with Miss Frost. "Why, when were you at the Simmons Telegraph School?"
"Shortly before I found employment with Mr. Matthew," Miss Frost replied. "It seemed a useful skill, but in the end I preferred the typewriter. And at the Commons, of course, I have some use for a metaphysical education. One doesn't find that in a telegraph office, or so I should have said before today."
"Have you gone to university, then?" Mrs. Carraway asked, leaning forward in sudden interest. "You must be frightfully clever. I know there are women's colleges, but I never met any of the scholars."
"I did," said Miss Frost. Usually imperturbable, she looked slightly taken aback to be the object of such fascinated scrutiny. "Though our colleges award no degrees, of course. As to cleverness, metaphysical skill is more a matter of effort and training than inherent talent. Each of us has a metaphysical energy to be drawn on, though not all of us have the chance to learn how. I was fortunate in my opportunities."
"Talent plays some role, surely," Julian said. He was thinking of the way Ned had taken to his training like a fish to water, of the easy elegance of his spells, in contrast to Julian's own more workmanlike competence.
"About as much as it does in criminal investigation, I imagine," said Miss Frost, flashing him a quick smile. "If you'll forgive the observation, Mr. Lyons, you have a prodigious memory, a natural talent for asking the right questions, and a way of gathering information into a coherent picture where others might see only confusion. But it seems to me a great deal of your work is a matter of time and effort."
"You're right about that. Asking questions is all very well and good, but you have to be in the right place to ask them."
"Which is why," Miss Frost said, folding her hands on the table, "with Mr. Matthew's permission, tomorrow morning I will present myself at the Waterloo Telegraph Company and apply for one of their open positions." Mrs. Carraway started, Ned frowned, and Julian regarded her for a moment, then grinned. "An excellent proposition."
"Hold on," Ned said. "That won't be necessary. If I stop by tomorrow, you'll put your head in the door, walk round for a few minutes, and agree with Mrs. Carraway that it smells of enchantments," said Miss Frost. "And then we'll be politely asked to leave, rather than linger where other people are working. I, on the other hand, will need to speak to the floor supervisor and meet the other operators, and, if all goes well, which I expect it shall, we'll be offered the job. They may even ask me to start immediately, which would be ideal for our purposes. They must be short-handed if they're letting go so many of their operators."
"I might just as easily apply for the position," Ned pointed out.
"You might," Miss Frost agreed, "but you won't as easily get it."
"Have you ever operated a telegraph?"
"I thought not." "Mrs. Carraway, do they use Morse code or Baudot system?"
"Neither," Mrs. Carraway replied. "They have their own system entirely. It seems inefficient when no one else knows how to use it, but they've these odd new machines, and they're terribly proud of them. Not to worry, if you're a fast typist, they'll be able to train you quickly enough."
"Excellent," said Miss Frost. "Then I believe that's settled. Shall we?" Ned paid the bill, and as they all braced themselves for the chill outside, he let Mrs. Carraway take his arm. It occurred to Julian belatedly that he ought to follow suit, and turning to Miss Frost, he extended his elbow. She gave him a new variation of the amused look she seemed to favor where Julian was concerned, then accepted the gesture. He had told Ned once that he liked her, and it was true. He appreciated self-sufficient people. Until recently, he'd have said he appreciated self-sufficient men. Ned's habit of deciding on a course of action, then pursuing it, whether or not he had any help at his back, had been one of the first things that drew Julian to him. But on reflection, he thought this must apply to women as well. Miss Frost was good company. She was quick and straightforward when it came to her work, reserved when it came to anything else, and she seemed not to want anything in particular from Julian, or expect him to want anything from her. Besides this, she seemed to like Ned, which, as far as Julian was concerned, showed excellent taste. Ned and Mrs. Carraway had been walking some paces ahead of them, deep in conversation, but now they paused to let a woman struggling with an armful of packages pass by.
"Oh, that reminds me," said Miss Frost, as she and Julian came up behind them. "I shall have to finish my Christmas shopping at once if I'm to have my references gathered for tomorrow. Mr. Matthew, would you be so good as to write me a letter of recommendation? If you leave it in your chambers, I can collect it before I go to Waterloo's."
"Of course," Ned said. "I'll be sure to recommend your creativity and sense of initiative in glowing terms."
"It's a telegraph office, Mr. Matthew," she said reprovingly, though Julian thought she looked pleased. I think hard work and reliability would have more appeal. Julian's thoughts had stalled on our earlier comment.
You're Christmas shopping.
Yes, she said, mouth twisting in distaste. The shops will be horribly busy, I suppose, but I don't know when else I'll have time. And I really must find something Mother will appreciate this year. Though not, as she's certain to remind me, as much as she would appreciate a son-in-law. Mrs. Carraway, I believe we need the same omnibus. Would you care to join me?
Happy hunting, Ned said, as the women were swept up in the crowd.
Julian stared after them. A Christmas gift for her mother. Of course, that was what one did for friends and family. And, it was occurring to him slowly, for lovers. A gloved hand caught him by the elbow. Ned, turning to face him.
All right, then?
It was pitched just too low for passerby to hear.
Julian blinked. Why wouldn't I be?
Don't be disingenuous, Ned said. His grip on Julian's elbow tightened, but not unpleasantly. That row we had back when we established an ongoing arrangement. You mentioned the girls at Oxford, Sophie in particular. His eyes searched Julian's face, just this side of wary.
You should know there's no reason to be jealous.
I do know that, Julian replied, a little impatiently, but with perfect honesty. Other than that quick instinctive pang on recognizing Mrs. Carraway, and he could hardly be blamed for that as relentlessly as she'd pursued Ned and as willingly as Ned had let himself be pursued, it hadn't occurred to him to doubt Ned's affections. And that was the problem, wasn't it? Ned would certainly have considered Christmas gifts. It was the sort of thing he did. He'd probably sent packages home already with well-chosen presents inside and a dutiful letter to his mother. He'd almost certainly had something for Julian, too, and Julian had a dead Urtica Mordax. He winced, then tried to hide it by saying,
"Come join me for a nightcap?"
"It's barely 5 o'clock," Ned said, smiling. At least he didn't seem concerned any longer.
"Yes," Julian agreed, "but the sun's already down."
Ned let his hand slip from Julian's elbow. "I can't fault your logic, but I do have a letter to write, and I barely looked in at my chambers. Give me an hour, maybe two?"
"All right. Don't keep me waiting."
They were in public, so nothing could be said aloud, but Julian knew how to let his eyes do the talking. So did Ned, for that matter.
Wouldn't dream of it.
That gave Julian time to return home and rifle through the post that had been piling up near the door. More bills and nothing at all of interest. What was of interest was the paper from the day before, which he'd barely had time to skim before rushing out for the conclusion of the Marley case. Something had been bothering him through most of their meal, and now he had it. An article on page 3 about the Waterloo Locomotive Company's astonishing new prototype. He read it 3 times. And then his eyes lit on an advertisement at the bottom of the page for Christmas novelties. He looked back up to the date at the top of the page. December 22nd. And today, of course, was the 23rd. And Christmas itself was 2 days away. Gifts hadn't come up the year before. One didn't, necessarily, give gifts to a friend. Even a friend you happen to be fucking on a semi-regular basis. Then he stopped in his tracks. Remembering the Christmas before that, when he'd been with Lennox, who had presented him with a marvelous silk dressing gown. Julian hadn't gotten Lennox anything. At the time, it hadn't seemed important, and Lennox hadn't minded. In retrospect, Julian thought he probably hadn't expected any better. He was still turning this over when Ned arrived.
"Good Lord," he said, eyes traveling around the room. "What's happened here?"
"I had an argument with my coffee machine."
"I see that."
"And with Mrs. Digby," Julian confessed.
"I see that, too. Her housekeeping leaves something to be desired, but I'd at least have expected her to clean up the glass. Sweep that up, then, and I'll find the dustbin."
In an effort to prove he was, in fact, capable of being obliging, Julian did as he was told, so he was on his knees picking out shards from behind the sofa when Ned let out a low exclamation. "Don't tell me you argued with the Urtica Mordax, too."
"Damn," Julian said forcefully.
"No, sorry. That was a mistake. I forgot to water it." Ned walked over to him, bin in his hands, peering down at the desiccated nettle.
"Pity. I was getting fond of it."
"I forget things," Julian said. He did not say it from between gritted teeth because he had carefully unclenched his jaw before speaking.
"You know that. I forget them all the time."
Ned leaned one hip against the sofa. You never forget anything. You remember every idiotic thing I ever said or didn't say at Oxford. He sounded amused rather than cross, but Julian was not in the mood. I forget things, he repeated. I remember minutiae, idiotic things you say, passing phrases in newspaper articles, inconsistencies in witness statements, but ask me to water a plant twice a week and I won't do it. Ned knelt down beside him. Julian wanted to tell him to be careful of the glass, but he'd just gotten a shard of it stuck in the ball of his own thumb and was busy picking it out with his teeth. He spat it into his palm and sighed. I'm well aware of your flaws, Ned said, and I never asked you to water the plant. I have, though, asked you to stop mixing those cantrips. Julian followed the direction of his glance. The glass of gin stood on the table by the sofa, the liquid stained a pale lavender with the ink of his enchantment. I was exhausted last night. I know, I was too. Came late to work today, maybe you noticed. He was smiling, gently and ruefully, and suddenly Julian wanted nothing more than to kiss that look off his face. So he did. Then he reached over to pour the gin into the dustbin, along with the Urtica Mordax and the shattered glass. Happy? Julian asked pointedly. Not yet, Ned said, a challenge in his eyes. Julian felt a smirk pulling at his lips. Still want that nightcap? Not really. Good, neither do I. Stave 2. Julian woke early the next morning to a low, familiar hissing sound in the next room and the growling of his own stomach. They'd been far too busy for supper the night before. He rolled out of bed and pulled on his dressing gown, the very one Lennox had given him 2 Christmases ago, now a little worn at the elbows and stained with ink and machine oil at the wrists, and he resolved to find something for Ned later that day. Ned himself was fussing over the burner. I've boiled some eggs, he said as Julian walked into the parlor. He dressed, but not shaved, and looked deliciously rumpled in yesterday's shirt and a night's growth of stubble. I didn't attempt the coffee machine, though. It needs a new vacuum chamber, Julian said. Sorry, we'll have to skip it. I'm out of some tea around here. He found a tin behind the morocco leather case. It had gone a bit stale, and there was no milk, but Ned claimed not to mind. Soon the room was filled with the smell of brewing tea and the soft cracking sounds as they rolled the eggs between their hands and peeled off the shells. It was comfortable. Domestic. Julian rather thought he liked it. To test the hypothesis a little further, he said, "Mare is yours if you want to shave." "Thanks," Ned said, "but I've time to run home before I go back to my chambers. Besides, I shouldn't stay too late. Mrs. Digby might notice." Julian couldn't argue, but he could feel disappointed. He covered it with a gulp of tea. His cup had been resting on one of the newspapers scattered around the parlor, and it left a damp brown ring around one of the headlines. "Oh," he said suddenly. "I've just remembered. Look here." He handed the paper over, and Ned scanned the article curiously. "The Waterloo Locomotive Company unveils its new steamless engine," he read aloud. "Clever of them. How do you suppose it works?" "No idea. I like mechanics, but that sort of innovation's beyond me. It was the name that caught my eye." "Yes, that's odd, isn't it? Could be coincidence." "It could," Julian said, "but the railroads are heavy users of the telegraph lines, so the industries aren't unrelated." He drained his tea while Ned finished the article. "They're awfully closed-mouthed about how they've done it. I suppose they stand to make a lot of money if nobody else can manage it. I've never heard of anything like. Engines are getting more efficient all the time, but this is years ahead of everyone else." Ned looked thoughtful. Julian watched him for a moment, then asked, "Could an engine run on magic?" "I was just wondering that." "Yes, of course, you could enchant an engine. The trouble is scale. A single experienced metaphysician might be able to get something the size of a railway locomotive moving, but I'd be astonished if they could keep it up for any length of time. It takes too much metaphysical energy. You'd need to cast a circle with at least a few others to power an enchantment like that." Julian flinched at the reminder of Farrell and the last time they'd encountered the workings of a metaphysical circle, but Ned was deep in thought and didn't seem to notice. "And you'd need continuous infusions of energy to keep it going. Short of a circle of metaphysicians on board working for the entire journey, I don't think it could be done. But I'm not a metaphysicist. There might be a way I haven't thought of." Julian considered stopping in to see Oppenshaw, the metaphysicist they'd consulted on the Farrell case, on a matter of idle curiosity like this. On balance, he thought, he'd almost prefer to leave the question unanswered. Ned had set down his cup and was shrugging on his coat. "Stop by early this afternoon, would you? Miss Frost said she'd be in by lunchtime with a report." "All right," Julian said. The collar of Ned's coat was bent backwards. Without a thought, he stepped in to straighten it, and, finding himself in a convenient position for it, he pressed a kiss to Ned's lips. "Have a good morning." Ned had stopped in the act of pulling on his gloves, and he was staring at Julian with an unreadable expression. Julian felt an odd flush rise to his face and covered it by picking up the teacups. "Have a good morning," Ned echoed, and was gone. Julian was not expecting any clients that morning. This was less than ideal from a business perspective, but it gave him the opportunity to finish reviewing the papers he'd been neglecting during their last case, and to reread the telegraph form Mrs. Carraway had given him. This was only two lines of text. As an exercise in cryptography, that made it more difficult. He'd have preferred something much longer to work with. Still, he'd given some study to codes and ciphers, and he thought he might be able to make some headway. When the clock struck 11, he looked up with a headache and no sense of progress, as well as the realization that he was running out of time to run errands and meet Ned at his chambers. He went first to buy a new vacuum chamber for his coffee machine, then found himself lingering outside shop windows, not quite certain what he was looking for. Then his thoughts turned with a jolt back to Ned, and his gift, and the fact that there wasn't one. And what could Julian buy for him, anyhow? Everything that occurred to him was too practical, or too expensive, or too meaningless. It was well after noon. He gave up and headed for the Commons. He met Miss Frost at the door.
"Good day, Mr. Lyons."
"And to you. Did you receive an interview?"
"I received a position," she replied with a matter-of-factness that could not quite hide her sense of satisfaction. "They asked me to start immediately."
"Oh, well done," Julian said with unfeigned admiration. "It wasn't terribly difficult," she admitted. "Once they saw I could type, their decision was made. I think they're hard-pressed for workers. It's no surprise from what Mrs. Carraway said." She had her hand on the doorknob. Before she could turn it, Julian said suddenly, "Miss Frost, what did you find for your mother?" She paused, looking at him with surprise.
"For Christmas?"
"A beaded purse. Entirely impractical, but then sometimes that's rather the point." "Ah," he said, and something of his thoughts must have shown on his face, because she smiled. "Were you hoping for gift ideas, Mr. Lyons? For your own mother, or—"
"Certainly not," he said. Quite aside from the fact that his mother was dead, the very thought of buying any of his relatives a purse made the imagination revolt, and obviously that wouldn't do for Ned.
"Never mind." She gave him a look that was entirely too knowing, and then led him into the chambers. They filled her in on the article Julian had found, then took her report in Ned's office. "I'm to return by 1 o'clock for training. I haven't met everyone yet, of course, but I did get a good look around the place. I can see exactly what Mrs. Carraway meant by the smell. It was faint, but quite distinct, if you know what you're looking for."
"Did you see any evidence of who might be casting enchantments?" Ned asked.
She shook her head.
"None at all. I'll keep a close eye out this afternoon, when I can spare a moment from training. Their telegraph machines are the strangest design. It'll take some work to learn the system."
"Keep an eye out for those odd messages, too," Julian said. "If you get the chance to save any of the forms, they could be some help. I've been trying to decrypt the one we have, and it would be much easier with more material. If I don't make any progress, I have some contacts we can ask."
"I'll do what I can," Miss Frost replied. "Telegrams are meant to be confidential, of course, but I expect I can slip one or two into my purse when no one is looking."
Miss Frost's purse was practical in the extreme. Sturdy and sizable, without a bead to be seen, and quite large enough to conceal a few telegraph forms, not to mention her wand. "I'll be by after closing today. I mentioned to Mrs. Carraway that she might stop in as well, so we can discuss our findings in more detail."
"Good. Thank you for your help on this. It's not likely to be lucrative, but Sophie's in a bad position, and anything I can do to help."
"What position, exactly?" Julian asked, thinking back to everything he'd noticed over their meal the day before. "I'd hazard a guess her marriage isn't a happy one, and if she's seeking employment herself—"
"She left her husband," Miss Frost said bluntly.
Ned was looking grave, but not surprised. Mrs. Carraway must have mentioned this on the walk back from Christie's. "She told me yesterday on the omnibus.
I shouldn't bring it up in front of her, though. I do have some sense of tact, Julian said in mild protest. Are there children?
No, mercifully, said Miss Frost.
What happened?
It was no small thing for a wife to leave her husband. She must have had good reason.
Mysterious telegrams are one thing, Miss Frost said, very crisply. But you must allow me to preserve some confidences, Mr. Lines.
Ned smiled.
Good work, Miss Frost. I should add that I don't expect you to work tomorrow, but is the telegraph office open on Christmas?
They are,
and they've asked me to be there. I truly don't mind. It's an opportunity to postpone the joys of my family's company.
Feel free to blame your unreasonable employer if your mother complains, Ned said.
I had fully intended to, Miss Frost agreed, and she took her leave.
Ned stretched back in his chair with a sigh.
What have you got for the afternoon, Lines?
Less than I'd like, Julian said gloomily. Business is at a bit of a standstill. I thought I might look into the Waterloo Locomotive Company connection if I've time.
That can't hurt. Thank you for your help as well. I know it's a lot to ask.
You know how I like a good puzzle, Julian said. And Ned smiled, but it wasn't his usual open look of affection or amusement.
Julian thought he seemed hesitant and couldn't account for it, but neither was he sure how to ask. Tracking down the history of the Waterloo Companies was not difficult, but it did take time. The sun had long set when Julian finished, and he turned back towards the Commons with the realization that he still had found nothing for Ned's gift. It was Christmas Eve, and he'd just about run out of time. The air had thickened, and the gas lamp struggled against the fog. The lights in the shops blazed in defiant cheer, illuminating the holly and berries strung up around each window pane. Julian walked slowly along, considering and discarding each shop. Ned's taste in literature was endearing but inexplicable, so the bookstore was no good. He was well supplied with metaphysical inks already. The mahogany wand case inlaid with silver was magnificent, but not really Ned's style, and anyhow Julian could never afford it. He turned away from a display of glittering cufflinks. Cufflinks, for God's sake! And went back to the Commons. Mrs. Carraway was already there, talking with Ned, who looked up quickly as Julian came in. He went so far as to rise and take Julian's coat, hand lingering at his shoulder just a trifle longer than necessary. Julian didn't mind this in the least, but it was unexpected. He nodded to Mrs. Carraway. She seemed more at ease than she had the day before, and regarded him with positive friendliness. Ned has just been telling me how helpful you've been, Mr. Lines.
Matthew exaggerates, Julian said. I've made no headway at all on that telegram. I did get a little farther on the Waterloo Companies. Has he told you about the steamless engine? And they're owned by the same parent company, that much is certain, but I don't know if that does us any good.
He looked about the room. Is Miss Frost here?
No, Ned said, frowning. I'd have expected her by now, too.
Do go on, though. What did you find?
Other than what I've said, very little. The Waterloo Locomotive Company has been in business since the 60s. They're well established. Innovative, but in small ways. This new engine's the first development of this size they've announced. The first development of this size the industry has seen in decades, for that matter. The telegraph company's quite new. The office you worked in, Mrs. Carraway, opened less than a year ago.
Why on earth would they invest in an entirely new business when they should be focused on their new engine?
Ned asked, and Julian shook his head.
My question, precisely. It seems unlikely, but I've no idea what it means.
All three of them looked up at the sound of the front door, and a moment later Miss Frost arrived, her cheeks pinched with cold, but her eyes bright with suppressed triumph. Without a word of greeting, or even bothering to remove her coat, she marched up to Ned's desk and set her purse down in the very center. It landed with a heavy thump.
Good evening, she said. Mr. Matthew, Mr. Lyons, Mrs. Carraway. I hope you've all had productive afternoons.
I take it you have, Ned said. Don't keep us in suspense, Miss Frost.
Very well.
With a motion just too brisk to be called a flourish, she opened the purse.
First, Mr. Lines, I've brought you that material you asked for.
She produced half a dozen telegraph forms, spreading them out neatly across the desk.
Several of these are duplicates, which is curious.
Yes, Mrs. Carraway said, bending her head over the desk. That happened quite frequently. We'd see the same message coming through, sometimes with slight variations.
But, more importantly, I think I may be able to help us interpret them.
I spent the whole afternoon training on those telegraph machines they use. And I agree with you, Mrs. Carraway. It makes no sense to manufacture their own patented machines with an entirely new system. Imagine the expense! Not to mention the need for each of their operators to learn the codes. I could understand if it made the operation faster, but as far as I can tell, the Baudot system is much better designed. She paused for breath, and possibly for effect.
It almost seems as though they've designed their telegraph code for another purpose entirely.
Go on, Ned said.
It's a 36-key system, Mr. Matthew.
Well, surely that makes sense, Julian said. 26 letters, 10 numeric digits.
You'd think so, Mrs. Carraway said, shaking her head.
But it's not nearly so logical. There are odd patterns you need to memorize. Miss Frost is right, it's terribly inefficient. And the other systems manage with far fewer keys.
Ned was staring fixedly at Miss Frost.
How are the keys arranged?
In a square, Miss Frost said, as though this had some deeper meaning.
Ned broke into a wide smile, and then Julian had it.
The metaphysical alphabet?
Precisely, said Miss Frost.
Mrs. Carraway's eyes widened.
So the enchantments I was smelling are coming from the telegraph machines themselves. She took out another piece of paper, unfolding it to reveal a square diagram with 6 columns and 6 rows. I've sketched out the layout. Correct me if I've made any mistakes, Mrs. Carraway. You can see how it would work, Mr. Matthew. The square of the sun here in this pattern. Her finger darted over the diagram.
Yes, of course.
And those odd messages, Julian interrupted. They might not mean anything in English, but if you rewrite them in the metaphysical alphabet...
I didn't have time to verify that, said Miss Frost. But I suspect we'll find their sigils.
Ned's brows had drawn together in furious thought.
It could work. Though why anyone would choose to do magic that way?
These messages. How many of them were being sent out from the Waverly Company's office, and how many were incoming?
They were all outgoing messages, said Mrs. Carraway. Every single one I saw. Does that matter?
It would, yes, depending on what they were intended to do. And it explains a great deal. As Miss Frost mentioned yesterday, every person has a store of metaphysical energy, and some of that energy is necessary to perform any enchantment. If you and the other operators at Waterloo were typing these messages, and if they work as we're beginning to suspect they do, I'm not at all surprised at the exhaustion you described.
You mean I've been performing magic all this time? Mrs. Carraway said, blinking.
But what sort of magic?
We'll have to decipher these messages to determine that, said Miss Frost. I think you had better help if you still remember the codes. We'll need to know the patterns to type out in order to understand the sigils, and I haven't memorized the system yet.
Of course. Mrs. Carraway's face had lit up. I can do that at once. I must say I don't at all like the idea that I've been used to cast enchantments without being told about it.
Julian shook his head. I don't blame you, especially if you've lost your job over it.
It is quite illegal, Ned said decisively. No person can be involved in or subjected to enchantment without their consent, whatever the intent of the magic. But I do think we'd better try to work out that intent before I bring this to Scotland Yard. The mechanism, too, if we can. The metaphysicists will have a field day.
I think I may be able to help with that, said Miss Frost, reaching again into her purse.
This time she pulled out a curious heavy device, a small brass frame with a pair of cylinders on either side of it. Julian recognized it at once.
That's an electromagnet. Did you get it off one of the telegraph machines?
Yes, Miss Frost replied, wiping a bit of machine oil from her gloves. I unscrewed it from the desk while everyone was packing up at the end of the day. I don't think anyone noticed.
The sigil for release, I suppose, Ned asked.
Yes, with a variant on around for the screws themselves, and...
Julian felt this was rather missing the point.
But why the electromagnet?
Because I had cast another enchantment already, looking for the source of magic, and everything pointed to this.
She handed it to Julian.
You take an interest in mechanical devices, don't you, Mr. Lines?
Yes, Julian said, though I don't recall mentioning it.
Oh, Mr. Matthews told me all about it, she said, at some length, on several occasions.
Ned had gone rather red, and now he coughed.
Would you have a look at it, Lines? See if there's anything out of the ordinary.
I'd bring it straight by the metaphysicists, but they'll have closed up by now. We can try them tomorrow. I don't think Oppenshaw knows what holidays are. He's bound to be in.
Julian nodded, already examining the electromagnet with interest.
I'm not at all certain what to look for, but I'll do what I can.
Good. In the meantime, I suppose we'd better get a start on decrypting these messages. But that can wait for another day. I'm sure you have plans, Sophie.
She'd been looking much happier and more energetic, the discussion and the prospect of being useful taking years off her face.
Now that energy faded.
Nothing of any importance. If I may take them home, I can write out the patterns for each of them tonight.
If you can spare the time, Miss Frost said, unexpectedly, you'd much better come home with me. The work will go faster that way, if you show me the pattern of the keystrokes and I interpret the sigils.
Oh, Mrs. Carraway said, faltering. But I would hate to intrude.
Nonsense, you'd be more than welcome. My mother is always pleased to have guests, and I am always pleased to have a distraction at the dinner table.
She offered a brief smile, and Mrs. Carraway visibly brightened. As they left, Julian tucked the electromagnet under his arm, and without any need for discussion, he and Ned both set off together toward Coptic Street.
I've bought a replacement vacuum chamber, he said, so I think I can offer you coffee tomorrow. If you're staying, that is.
With that sort of inducement, how could I refuse? Julian snorted.
He fixed the coffee machine while Ned watched with mild interest, then set the electromagnet beside it.
I suppose the first thing to do is test it, he said. If I had an electric light bulb around, that would be ideal, but I think I could make this work.
He fiddled for a moment with one of the wires, then turned the machine on. Nothing happened.
Is it broken? Ned asked.
It looks intact, but...
Can you try that enchantment Miss Frost mentioned, to look for the source of any magic? Perhaps it's not the electricity we should be paying attention to.
Of course.
Ned drew out his wand, unfocused his eyes, and then moved his hand swiftly. He frowned in concentration.
There's definitely some sort of enchantment working on it. Quite a strong one, too. It just doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Let me try once more, and perhaps if you turn the machine on again?
Julian flipped the switch. Before Ned could do so much as raise his wand, the coffee machine exploded.
Julian sprang back from the table, knocking over the bin with the remains of the Urtica Mordax. Ned cursed, eyes wide, and sketched out several more sigils too rapidly for Julian to follow. The spurt of orange flame died down, revealing a twisted, smoking coffee machine, the new vacuum chamber blown to pieces, just like the last one. The electromagnet itself was perfectly intact.
Well, Julian said, when he'd got his breath back.
That was unexpected.
Ned let out a shaky laugh.
I think we'd best leave further investigation to the metaphysicists.
Is it non-conforming magic, then?
No, I don't think so, but it's very powerful, clearly, and until I know how it's meant to work, I don't think experimenting is a good idea, if only for your landlady's sake.
Julian looked up and noted the scorch marks spattered across the ceiling. Mrs. Digby would never let him hear the end of this. He sighed, then righted the bin, remnants of gin and dried leaves sloshing around the bottom.
I may have to rescind that offer of coffee after all.
Ned grinned, bright and familiar, and Julian found himself saying very quickly and quite without meaning to,
I haven't got you anything for Christmas.
Ned stared at him. Then he said,
I didn't expect you to.
That was not, in fact, at all reassuring.
It is expected, Matthew. Miss Frost was buying gifts for her mother. Did you send presents to your family?
Well, yes, but...
And did you get anything for me?
Yes, Ned said. But not because I wanted anything in return.
And when did you start caring about holidays in the first place, Lines?
The point, Julian said, is that I didn't think about it until just yesterday. And now I can't even offer you coffee.
I don't mind about the coffee, Ned said.
You will in the morning.
I will in the morning.
And I've killed the damn Urtica Mordax.
Is this what you've been worried about? Ned asked in surprise.
Here I've thought all the time it was Sophie.
Julian resisted the urge to roll his eyes.
I told you I wasn't jealous.
And why did you think I was worried?
You clearly had something on your mind. And Ned was blushing again. Just a little. He had the sort of complexion where it showed. Julian loved that, though he'd never say so out loud. This morning, when I left, you kissed me. You've never done that before.
I kiss you regularly, Matthew, and if you're inclined to forget it.
Not like that, Ned said seriously. Not just for its own sake, in passing, when there's no chance of follow-through.
Did you mind?
No, Ned said at once. It was comfortable. Ordinary.
That sounds perilously close to dull.
That's not what I meant. I want kissing you to be ordinary. I understand that's one of the perils of a relationship, and to tell the truth, I rather like the idea.
Ned reached for him across the table. He smelled of smoke and sulfur and hair oil, and his hand was warm and sure at the back of Julian's neck.
And so we're both clear on the matter. I like that a great deal better than Christmas presents, or remembering to water the plants, or whatever else you think you're expected to do. I can live without coffee, and I can stay the night if you want me to.
I always want you to stay, Julian said. It came out with surprising ease, and he was rewarded with Ned's sharp intake of breath. They rattled the table between them, sending the electromagnet sliding off and into the bin. Ned tried to pull away, but Julian kept hold of him.
Never mind that. We should take care of it.
It'll keep until morning, Julian said, and Ned gave in without further protest. Stave 3. Julian woke far earlier than he'd planned, tangled in the sheets with a happy lassitude in his limbs. There was a gentle tickle at the base of his skull.
Matthew, he groaned into his pillow. It's not that I don't appreciate the thought, but you could just wait another hour or two.
Hmm? The groggy question came from entirely the wrong direction, and Julian froze. His eyes snapped open to show Ned on the other side of the bed, still mostly asleep, his hands chastely at his sides. Which meant that whatever was stroking the back of his hair, he slapped frantically at his neck, and something bit him. Julian let out a strangled yelp, shooting up in bed. Ned pushed himself onto one elbow.
Quiet, he said in sleepy alarm. Someone will hear. What on earth's the matter?
Julian's fingers had fastened around something long and fibrous. It twisted in his grasp, and he reached frantically to turn up the gas.
Good Lord, Ned said, staring.
It was the Urtica Mordax, squirming and coiling and very much alive.
That is impossible, Julian said,
then bit his lip against another yell as the nettle protested his tight grip. Julian threw on his dressing gown, this time quite without guilt, and stumbled into the parlor with Ned at his heels. It was the same scene of destruction they'd left the night before, now with the added touch of a long string of leaves and broken glass where the Urtica Mordax had pulled itself out of the bin and across the floor to the bedroom. He walked slowly over to the bin and picked it up. Aside from the ruined vacuum chamber and the smell of dried gin, the electromagnet lay inside. He touched it gingerly and snatched his fingers back. It was hot to the touch.
What do you suppose happened? Ned asked, coming up beside him.
Julian rubbed a hand across his eyes, still gritty with sleep.
Let me think. The electromagnet, clearly something set off the magic in it.
And that brought it back to life?
Is that even a metaphysical possibility?
Theoretically, Ned said, looking down into the bin in awe and confusion. Unlikely, with organisms as complex as animals, mind you, and certainly not with humans, but plants are simpler. I'll introduce you to one of the metaphysical botanists at the Commons. He can explain it better. But it's just a theory, and the amount of energy it would take.
Wait, Julian said, holding hand up. He really hadn't gotten enough sleep for this.
Just a moment, let me think.
We agreed yesterday a locomotive engine could be powered by enchantment, but you'd need multiple metaphysicians working round the clock to do it.
Yes.
If you had a group of people working all hours of the day, not trained metaphysicians, mind you, but
people with an average amount of metaphysical energy, and you had them in sufficient quantities, and you had them pouring that energy into a convenient receptacle, into an electromagnet, for example, Ned said, catching on.
Exactly.
Then, yes, I think if you set up things correctly, and I'll need Oppenshaw to confirm, but I think this might just work. You could collect metaphysical energy for later use.
Julian held out the bin.
Voila! A metaphysical battery.
That's extraordinary. And completely immoral, not to mention illegal, if they were hiring telegraph operators like Sophie just to wear them out and drain them of magic.
Ned looked back toward the bedroom door, where the Urtica Mordax had begun to drag itself back across the floor.
But how?
Julian sank into a chair, a grin spreading across his face.
Oh, of course, it was that enchantment.
What?
The one I cast 2 nights ago, the one you were scolding me for. It was for restorative sleep and renewed energy.
And you poured it into the bin, Ned said, beginning to laugh. Right on top of the nettle, and then fed it all the metaphysical energy it could possibly need.
There, Julian said triumphantly. Let's see you complain about my cantrips again, now they've solved a case for you.
Don't gloat, Lines, Ned returned, but he was still smiling. It doesn't suit you.
He shook his head wonderingly.
This is extraordinary. I've half a mind to go knock Oppenshaw up at once. What time is it?
Much too early.
Julian gave into a yawn, then bent to pick up the Urtica Mordax and return it to its usual place. A tendril wound itself around his wrist, almost, he thought, in affection.
I told you you'd regret the coffee.
They waited until the earliest decent hour to return to the commons. Oppenshaw was not in yet, so Ned led the way back to his chambers, where they found Miss Frost and Mrs. Carraway already waiting. Mrs. Carraway sprang up as they entered, the telegraph slips clutched in her hand.
"Oh, good, you're here," she exclaimed. "Cordelia's worked everything out."
"It was something of a mutual effort," said Miss Frost.
"Good morning," Ned said, bemused. "And Merry Christmas. Were you working all night?"
Mrs. Carraway did indeed look as though she'd missed some sleep, with dark smudges under her eyes, but she didn't appear to regret it at all.
"It did take some time," she admitted, "but we deciphered all the messages, and we know what they were used for."
"The enchantments," Miss Frost said, "are mostly variations on gather together, all intended to siphon metaphysical energy from those performing the spells."
"And trap it into an electromagnet for later use," Julian finished, "to power a locomotive engine, and, I imagine, a great variety of other things. Clever, really."
"Oh," said Mrs. Carraway, slightly disappointed.
"You got there before us."
"Probably sometime after," Ned said, "unless you really were up all night."
Her cheeks went suddenly pink.
Julian blinked.
"Well, be that as it may," said Miss Frost, slightly more loudly than necessary. "And whoever arrived at the solution first, I think we have sufficient evidence to bring it to the authorities."
Ned nodded, taking the telegraph forms from Mrs. Carraway and peering at the notes written between the lines. He, at least, appeared not to have noticed her reaction.
"These should go to Hatton, I think. I'll take care of that. Take the holiday with your mother, Miss Frost, unless you've decided you do want a change of career."
"I should say not, Mr. Massey." She shook his hand and then turned to Julian.
"And Merry Christmas, Mr. Lines."
"Merry Christmas, Miss Frost," Julian offered her an innocent smile. "I'm glad to see yours has been as successful as mine." She gave him a measuring look. The set of her mouth was stern, but it did not quite hide the twinkle in her eye.
"Likewise, I'm sure.
Sophie, would you care for some breakfast?"
After Mrs. Carraway had thanked them effusively and taken her leave, Ned frowned at him.
"What was that about?"
"Nothing of importance."
"Should we drop this electromagnet at Oppenshaw's and then go straight for the yard, or will Hatton have plans, do you think?"
"You know how it is with these confirmed bachelors," Ned said, reaching for Julian's hand in the privacy of the closed office.
"They never have anything better to do than work, even on the holiday."
Julian tightened his fingers around Ned's.
"Oh, I'm not so sure of that," he said, smiling faintly. "I think we know how to keep Christmas rather well."
The end.